It is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer. It is draft week, which is why I'm in Kansas City, a place where the draft will not take place, and there's no football-related things occurring. I'm here for Orioles stuff, actually, Jonas. I will be back in Baltimore very soon. We will be at the Castle on Thursday to do a live pre-draft show, or pre-pick show, I should say, before the Ravens are on the clock at number 30, and then we will have a live post-pick show to go along with it so that it can hit your earbuds by Friday morning, and you'll know everything we have to say about who the Ravens end up selecting at number 30 overall. But Jonas, is the excitement bubbling through you this week?
I can't stop Googling NFL mock drafts. I have a problem, Paul. it's a real issue for me. I know just how far to scroll to like land in the 28, 29, 30 neighborhood. I get really disappointed when I see a mock draft that I don't like. ESPN's Jordan Reed, who does great work, but has the Ravens trading out of 30 and the Commanders taking the guy that I think they probably would take at 30, Tyler Guyton, and then the Ravens taking a defensive lineman at 36. So I get very protective of my imagination, and it's very disconcerting to see bad mock drafts, but that's a Jonas problem. I need to talk about in therapy with my therapist.
Yeah, not on the airwaves. If Guyton is there, why would the Ravens trade out? That makes no sense.
I don't know what to tell you, but we don't know their big board. We don't know their big board.
No. Well, we are going to give our spiciest draft takes in just a little bit. But first, Jonas, we got to talk about J.K. Dobbins landing on the Chargers, going back to Jay Harbaugh, not John, but his brother. And boy, the Chargers are really building the Ravens West out there. You tweeted out at Jonas_Schaefer all of the Ravens connections that the Chargers have now that they have J.K. Dobbins in the fold. We're talking about Harbaugh's brother. We're talking about Greg Roman as their offensive coordinator. We're talking about Jesse Minter as their defensive coordinator, who was with the Ravens a few years ago. We're talking about Joe Ortiz as their GM, who worked under Eric DaCosta. J.K. Dobbins now at running back. Gus Edwards now back at running back. Ben Mason at fullback. Hayden Hurst at tight end, who was on the Ravens a few years ago. Bradley Bozeman at center. Plus a ton, a litany of front office people who Joe Ortiz and Jim Harbaugh have poached from the Ravens. Why are they doing this? Why are they just trying to build the Ravens on the West Coast?
I mean, it goes back to, I think, why coaches hire only other coaches that they're familiar with. You know, you want to have a baseline of expectations, and, you know, like the Ravens, they really liked Derrick Henry for a while, and they were most comfortable with trading for him or signing him ultimately. And I feel like it's the same kind of impulses right now, where Greg Roman knows the kind of players he likes. He maybe, I don't know if there's a barrier to entry with his schemes. I wouldn't think there would be, although, you know, some players told me that it was pretty complicated. And so maybe you have just this foundation of guys who would be a step ahead, and that helps everyone else in the room. But yeah, I mean, I don't, as romantic as this whole reunion is, like, how many of these guys are we going to be talking about when they actually play the Ravens? And like, first of all, I do think this is probably even more of a reason that the Ravens and Chargers are going to play each other on Thanksgiving, because you literally have one big happy/unhappy family coming together. But also, like, if J.K. Dobbins hits, if Gus Edwards hits, if, you know, Jesse Minter hits, then you do have these kind of natural built-in narratives that would give that game even more juice. Not that it would be lacking any because of the Harbaugh-ness of it all.
Yeah, well, they literally have the same running back room. I mean, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins, it's the same running back room. And speaking of J.K. Dobbins, obviously we knew that a reunion between the Ravens and Dobbins was not going to happen this offseason, simply because the Ravens went out and signed Derrick Henry, because of how few games Dobbins has been available for the last couple seasons. And it's just frustrating because you see all of the immense talent that he had and the expectations he had when he was taken in the 2020 draft, and you look at the numbers per game basis and a per carry basis, and they were phenomenal. 6 yards per carry in 2020, came back from injury, obviously missed 2021, and still had 5.7 yards per carry in 2022. He starts the 2023 season in the game against the Texans with this acrobatic leap into the end zone, and you're thinking a healthy J.K. Dobbins could be immensely helpful for this offense, and it just wasn't meant to be. And I do think you still can get wistful thinking about where that offense, what that offense might have done in the game against the Chiefs if they had J.K. Dobbins in the backfield and not Gus Edwards.
It gives you kind of a pit in your stomach just because of the what could have been-ness of it all. You just rattled off the stats and they were incredible, and it makes you feel, I don't even know what the word is. Like, Eric DaCosta took some flack for not really engaging seriously with the J.K. Dobbins negotiations before last season, when there was that weird hold-in situation that was unfolding with J.K., where he was there at the facility, but he wasn't really practicing, and a lot of that, you know, was related to contract demands. But, you know, how bad would the Ravens, you know, be looking right now, considering their very, very precious salary cap space, if they'd given him like a, you know, 2-year, $10 million or 3-year, you know, $14 million deal. And we just wouldn't know if the guy who was already coming back from serious injury now had another one and was being expected to, you know, do something productive for that offense. So it's a tough situation for all running backs. I mean, just the lifespan of running backs in the NFL is so heartbreakingly short. I'm hopeful that J.K., you know, could get back to a version of the guy that he was before in Baltimore. I don't know if we'll ever see the old juiced up J.K. that we did when he was a rookie, when he was a second year guy in Baltimore. But, you know, even when he was lacking that fourth or fifth gear in 2022, he was still one of the best running backs in the NFL. You know, he ran for 200 yards in Pittsburgh without ever really needing to get above like 18, 19 miles per hour. And that was because, you know, obviously of the blocking up front, but also just because he was a very, very shifty, instinctive runner. And I'm hopeful that he's able to, you know, recapture a little bit of his old form. I'm sure the Chargers would love that, but it is just a very, very sad story about what he could have been had he stayed healthy, but he just wasn't able to.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how that Chargers team comes together too, and if that running back room, literally the same running back room, will produce any different results. Jonas, let's talk about our draft takes, because we are a mere 3 days away from the Ravens keeping us up all night and making their pick at like 11:45, and then us praying before the pick that they don't trade out and just make the night entirely worthless for us. We have devised these takes and split these takes into mild, hot, and spicy categories based off the show Hot Ones, which neither of us really like. But we watched that Conan episode last week, and boy, that was hilarious. So we are just trying to recreate. Please don't recreate that in any way. You have your glass of milk nearby to prepare for these incredibly spicy takes, Jonas.
I don't need it. It's the listeners who will need some.
We'll be ingesting our takes.
Yeah, right.
All right. Let's start with our mild take. Jonas, what is your first mild draft take?
First of all, I worry that like my spiciest take will not be spicy enough, just because I am very much a pragmatist who kind of looks at stuff through a rational angle. So don't get your expectations too high. We did put a lot of work into these. We can talk about just how much of a letdown they were at the end of it, but starting things off with a kind of milquetoast take, which was, sure, at the end of the first round, we will be praising the Ravens again for letting the draft board come to them. This has been a staple of Ravens drafting, a staple of reception to Ravens drafting. And, you know, like I mentioned, Paul, been looking at a lot of mock drafts. You kind of get a sense for how things could fall based on informed people and uninformed people projecting what might happen on Thursday. I went through basically the list of first round prospects. And by my accounting, I have like 27 consensus locks, like meaning like above 80% probability to go in the top 29. So 27 guys for the top 29. So right up until the Ravens are expected to be on the board. You have the big four quarterbacks, four wide receivers, Harrison, Neighbors, Adunze, Brian Thomas, one tight end, Brock Bowers, eight offensive linemen, Ault, Fashanu, Fuaga, Thaatanu, Latham, Mims, Barton, Jackson Powers, Johnson, four edge rushers, Dallas Turner, Leatu Latu, Jared Verse, Chop Robinson, two defensive linemen, Byron Murphy, Johnny Newton, and four quarterbacks, Terrion Arnold, Quinion Mitchell, Cooper Jean, Nate Wiggins. So that's 27 guys. That would leave these four guys on the board: Tyler Guyton, A.D. Mitchell, Kool-Aid McKinstry. That's a good place to be, right? You know, and that's not even accounting for all of these fringe first rounders that might go higher than expected. You know, what if the Raiders surprise everyone by taking Michael Penix at number 12? What if someone makes a move for Bo Nix? What if, you know, someone falls in love with Xavier Worthy? What if someone falls in love with Keon Coleman, Ladd McConkey, Xavier Leggett? You know, Darius Robinson has been being talked about as a guy who could go to the Ravens, obviously at number 30, but also just go in the 20s because of what he did at the Senior Bowl and just the production that you would get and the high upside with his run defense. You know, there's a lot of buzz for Mikey Samrasil, who, you know, we talked about in our last podcast, just being this plug and play slot guy who could be a very, very productive player early in his career. Marshawn Nealon, the edge rusher out of Western Michigan, who's kind of a dark horse for that first round spot. So you put all that together, and I think it's very unlikely that there will be a need to trade back. I think, you know, if maybe all these fringe guys go higher than expected, there's maybe more of an incentive for the Ravens to trade up, because let's say Amarius Mims is sitting there unexpectedly at 25 and the Ravens, you know, have him as the 11th or 12th rated player on their board. I think you might be willing to, you know, roll the dice on a guy like that and moving up because of just the need for the value and the fact that maybe you weren't expecting him to be there in the same way that Kyle Hamilton wasn't there at number 14 a couple years ago. So obviously, you know, this could all go horribly wrong for the Ravens. Maybe there is a situation where some of those consensus first rounders fall to them, but they don't necessarily need the help, or they kind of have red flags in the Ravens evaluations. Like, you know, would they take Johnny Newton when they already have Justin Madubuike? We talked about that a couple pods ago. You know, they were interested in Emmanuel Forbes, the skinny, speedy cornerback from Mississippi State last year, who went to the Commanders ahead of them in the first round. Would they also be interested in Nate Wiggins when Emmanuel Forbes was just a flagrant disaster last year in Washington? If Jackson Powers Johnson is there on the board, would they like him as a guard when most people are projecting him as a center? He has experience at guard spot, but again, you already have Tyler Linderbaum. Are you going to invest another, you know, precious first round pick in a guy who is best served probably at center instead of at guard? So in general, you know, trust the process, let this kind of play out in the way that I think it will. And I think that's going to be a situation where the Ravens, where it works to the Ravens' advantage. But I just think that based on everything I've seen, everything I've read, everything I've heard, it feels like the Ravens are in a good spot to get a guy that, in my estimation, would be good value for them.
Yeah, Eric DaCosta did mention that they have a group that they consider first rounders that is fewer than 32 players. And like you said, that you have 27, and for them, you know, they probably narrow it down even further to guys that they consider first round talents who are worthy of their first round pick. So that would be, you know, probably taking out the quarterback. So guys that they would really truly consider with first round picks. And if a guy's not on the board by the time it gets to them, they might trade back. And if those guys are going quickly and there's only one of them left by the time we get to the 25th or 26th pick, like you said, maybe it's Amarius Mims, might have to pull the trigger for a trade up. They have plenty of draft capital to do it. I know it's not their MO, but if you're talking about a group of offensive linemen that are considered first round talents, and then there's a drop off, got to make sure that you get in that group because you have a long-term and a short-term need at offensive tackle. My mild draft take, Jonas, has to do with that offensive line and who will fall to the Ravens, because I have some concerns. I do think that those offensive linemen and those offensive tackles will go a lot faster than some people think, and the Ravens might have to trade up. My take is that 8 tackles will be off the board by the time the Ravens pick at number 30. And that's not just including Jackson Powers Johnson, who's viewed as an interior lineman. I threw Graham Barton in here. He can move around to pretty much all 5 offensive line spots. I'm considering him a tackle for the purpose of this, because if the Ravens take him, maybe they use him at tackle here. But we're talking Olufoshanu from Penn State, Joe Alt from Notre Dame, Talisi Fuaga from Oregon State. Those guys are definitely going to be off the board. We're talking about C.J. Latham from Alabama, Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, Amarius Mims from Georgia, Graham Barton from Duke, and Kingsley Suamatia from BYU. That's 8 guys. And the reason I think that those guys could all be off the board by pick number 30, I went through and I looked at the teams. Tell me I'm wrong, but these are the teams I think could, and a lot of these teams will, take offensive tackles in the first round. The Chargers, we know that Jim Harbaugh likes to lean into that run, that run game, and he wants to pave the way for Gus Edwards and for J.K. Dobbins. The Titans, I think, certainly. The Bengals, the Cowboys, after losing their star tackle, the Packers, the Eagles, the Raiders, the Saints. That's 9 teams. Wait, is that 9 teams or 8 teams? Maybe I missed one. That's enough teams to take those 8 offensive tackles. And one more I think we should consider is the Chiefs have needs on the offensive line and offensive tackle.
They're Packers too.
What's that?
Packers too.
Packers. Yeah, maybe I forgot them. The Chiefs could trade up and hop past the Ravens and take an offensive tackle. So I think the Ravens, yes, it is their MO to be patient and to let the board and the best player available fall to them. But I really would not be opposed to them getting a little bit aggressive here, because they're picking later than they have in a long time. They have as much draft capital as, they ever have, essentially 9 picks. Go up and get one of those guys. If they start coming flying off the board, you don't want to be stuck there saying, well, there's no first round talents, let's just trade out. Because this is a draft, I really think they need to get a cornerstone on one end of the offensive line, because they have 2 spots there that could be open in 2025.
And you mentioned the Chiefs, but another team that could trade up and I think is expected to trade up is the Commanders. Jordan Reed, who we mentioned at the top of the show, went on DC Sports Radio last week and said that, they have, I think, number 36 and number 40. And them trading up out of one of those spots to go get a tackle is like the worst kept secret in the draft. And that could be bad news for the Ravens. Maybe they just take the spot of another team that would be drafting a tackle, but doesn't like the value. And so it's kind of a, apples for apples swap in, but that's another team that could jump the line and really make life difficult for the Ravens. And again, just because these guys are in the first round doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be better than the guys in the second or the third. Someone like Karan Amagaji, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, the oft injured but quite athletic tackle from Yale, could be just a total diamond in the rough that turns out to be a top 4 tackle in this class. But yeah, it's a scary season for the Ravens when you start looking at all the teams in the back half of the first round who need a tackle and could take a tackle. I mean, it's kind of funny, just all the sliding doors angles to this, which is like, if the Saints hadn't found out that Ryan Ramczyk's medicals are kind of effed and that they would probably need to take a tackle in the first round, the Ravens would probably be feeling marginally better about their chances of getting a guy, because that is a team that seems almost like they have to address that position early in the draft because one of their guys just so happens to be kind of a train wreck medically. So it's going to be interesting to see just, where we stand. But I think the over-under on like one of the betting sites right now for the number of first round offensive linemen, not tackles, but just offensive linemen, is 7.5. And I feel like from where I stand, over 7.5 is a pretty good bet.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even include Jordan Morgan in that list, and he could be off the board as well. All right, Jonas, what's your hot take? This is the medium range take. This is when you should start feeling a little tingle in the back of your throat, and maybe don't do what Conan did and just dump it on your tongue.
So I think we can establish the Ravens need positions as offensive line, edge rusher, cornerback, wide receiver. I think that if the Ravens were to take a running back before any of those positions, it would be crazy. Crazy. I know Eric DaCosta talked at the pre-draft news conference about how this is a expectation that they're going to take a running back. And, you know, obviously we know their fidelity to the big board means that if they see someone that they have a really high grade on and he's sitting there in the third round, they might take him. But I just think that based on what they've done with their roster, based on the fact that they've brought in Derrick Henry, it would be ultimately counterproductive for what they want to do this year to take him before some of these other need spots. And I kind of signs the shit out of this, Paul. So bear with me for a second. Ravens last year, sixth in the NFL with 453 design runs. And again, that's with a team that was blowing a lot of opponents out. You know, that had a very, very favorable end game situations where they could just literally run out the clock. So let's be generous and say that they have 450 design runs in 2024, just so we have that nice round number. Derrick Henry, last three seasons in Tennessee, the share of design runs with the Titans, 75.6% in 2020, 75.4% in 2022, 65.9% in 2023. So about, you know, three quarters in some years of the design carries were going to Derrick Henry. Lamar Jackson, the past three seasons, 17.3% of the design runs were going to Lamar. The previous two seasons, 25.5%, 27.6%. So again, let's be conservative and say that those guys combined for 75% of those design runs in 2024. Let's also be pessimistic and say Keaton Mitchell just doesn't come back at all or until late in the season. If Justice Hill gets even 10% of the carries next season, and that would be a pretty steep fall from the 18% of the design carries he got last year, that leaves just 15% of the pie left. Paul, do you want to take a guess at what 15% of 450 is?
Why are you making me do math?
67.5. So that's four carries per game. Even if you jump that up to 20%, that's just over five carries per game. You can't tell me that a running back getting five carries per game, no matter how talented he is more valuable to this team as it's currently constructed than the possibility of a, you know, cornerback helping you out 20 snaps a game, or a tackle, you know, being there for, you know, let's say 40 a game, and that's missing like the first half of the season while he kind of gets up to speed, or an edge rusher being there and maybe giving you 25 to 30 snaps a game. I just don't, this isn't an argument against best player available, because obviously we've seen the quality of the Ravens roster that has been produced by that BPA approach. To me, it's just an argument against the marginal benefit of taking a running back when you don't have an outside receiver or right tackle or a sure thing guard or pretty much any cornerback depth. And it's also, to me, you know, an acknowledgement that John Harbaugh takes a while to come around on rookie running backs. And he wouldn't necessarily need to throw a third round running back into the fire this year because he has Derrick Henry, because he has Justice Hill. But think of all the great running backs that he's had over the years, you know, Ray Rice, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, even Bernard Pierce was productive as a rookie. And in all those games, in all those years, he had seven games, John Harbaugh did, where rookie running back got double-digit carries. So there is that hesitation to give these guys the rock early in their career. And guess what? You know, let's say, oh, well, you know, you just kind of bring these guys along for the latter part of the season so that when John Harbaugh does get more comfortable with them, they will be ready to roll. You also run into a problem there because Derrick Henry is a running back who historically is at his best in November and December and January. So this isn't an argument against taking a running back full stop. I think actually like that kind of rookie learning curve I just talked about makes me more understanding about why the Ravens would want to invest in a running back this year as opposed to waiting for next year and, you know, grooming them as the kind of potential replacement for Derrick Henry, because of the way that his contract is laid out, it's probably more likely than not that this is just going to be a one-year deal for him. But I just think that the Ravens, they've got to be realistic about their roster. And I think that I'd rather them take a running back with a second round grade in the second round next year and project him as your starter for the next 4 years than take a second round rated running back in the third round this year and have that path to the field blocked for basically a season. So again, they could totally flout their, you know, this line of thinking, and they might see Jonathan Brooks there, you know, in the later stages of the third round and say, we want that guy because we saw what he did at Texas and we freaking love it. But if you haven't, you know, addressed the positions that are more pressing to your roster, I just think it would be bad roster construction.
Yeah. I mean, from a positional standpoint, ideally, you know, you would like to save that rookie season for a running back where he has an open deck in front of him, where he's unimpeded on the depth chart. It's just going to come down to best player available. I really think, once you get to a certain point, you know, maybe those are four snaps. First off, I think you're assuming lack of injury, which, you know, the Ravens might suffer. Derrick Henry's been remarkably durable through his career, but as mentioned, he's 30 years old and he has taken a lot of punishment in his NFL career. And we saw,
I know, but then why invest in Derrick Henry if you are expecting him to get hurt? You know, I mean, like they're not expecting him to get hurt.
I mean, that's why, you know, teams have the multiple avenues to add talent, because you have contingency plans upon contingency plans. I don't think the Ravens were expecting Keaton Mitchell to have to be called upon midway through the year to be their number one running back, because they had J.K. Dobbins that they were hoping was going to be healthy and Gus Edwards ahead of him. And Keaton Mitchell ended up being very crucial to their success for a 5-6 game stretch in the middle of the year, and maybe would have changed the outcome of that playoff game, the AFC championship game, if he were healthy. I mean, I think given the talent in the mid rounds for these running backs, I think anywhere from the third to the fourth to the fifth round would be okay. Third round might be a little bit pricey, but I think once you get to day three, I think anything's on the table. And if it is a one-year deal for Derrick Henry, then it is a long-term need. And sure, you take a year of a guy sitting on the bench for a position where, you know, the age is critical, but also get the best player available. If there's a guy you like that keeps slipping, go out and get him. I don't think it would be absolutely bonkers. Now, if it was a second round pick, yeah, that'd be pretty bonkers for them to take a running back. And I think that'd be a bad investment of resources. All right, Jonas, my hot take, the second round of takes here, is that the Ravens will make a draft weekend trade to acquire a wide receiver. And the reason that I have this, I see the eyebrows going up there, Jonas. How spicy would you say this take is?
I think the certainty of it is what's spicy. I mean, I think there was reporting last week that teams were calling Denver about Courtland Sutton, who the Ravens have long been interested in.
I have been mentioned.
We know that they want an ex receiver. I don't know that Rashad Bateman would necessarily be part of a deal, but was interesting that Jason Lockenfora, who you might not like if you're listening to this podcast, reported in the Post, I think on Saturday, that he could be dealt by the end of the draft. You know, he apparently took down a bunch of Raven stuff off his Instagram feed. Yeah. We know
apparently he does that every
offseason. First 3 years in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Right. So it's definitely within the realm of a possibility. And we know that the Ravens have been, they haven't hit all the levers that they could to give themselves some space. If it means taking on whatever the cap hit for Courtland Sutton is, I'm sure it's probably pretty substantial at this point.
Yeah. So the reason that I have them trading for a wide receiver instead of just going out and drafting a wide receiver with one of their mid-round picks is I think they want to get more of a sure thing. And yes, Zay Flowers was great for them as a rookie, and they expect him to take a step up. But there are some wide receivers like Cortland Sutton that's out there. I don't think his cap hit is all that absurd. I think it's only like he's only owed like $15 million each of the next 2 years, which is big, but
yeah, only a $13 million base salary right now.
Yeah. For the next 2 years. So that's not utterly absurd for a guy who is 29 years old. And maybe the thinking there is Sean Payton with the Broncos sees a quarterback that he wants to go out and get. And so he's willing to take on, you know, add a draft pick in order to deplete his wide receiver room depth. Maybe Devontae Adams, if the Raiders also fall in love with a quarterback who is slipping through the draft. And Devontae Adams is 31 years old. I know he's a little bit older, but he has still been incredibly productive over the last several years. And I just could see it happening. I think that they need to add to that wide receiver room, because you just can't count on Rashad Bateman taking a massive leap back up to his pre-2022 self. You brought back Nelson Agholor, but he's really nothing more than a fourth wide receiver. And Zay Flowers, is he really ready to be a true number one? And even if he is, you still could use a Robin to his Batman. And I think the Ravens could stay in the second round and take somebody like Keon Coleman or, you know, Xavier Worthy or A.D. Mitchell if he's there. But I think it'd be awesome to see the Ravens try to pair another veteran wide receiver with Lamar Jackson like they did last year. Didn't entirely work out for OBJ, but maybe they say we went the free agency route last year. Let's go trade route this year.
Yeah, and if it's going to be Denver, we know that they kind of hard up for draft picks because of the deal to get Sean Payton in the first place. We know that there's a need there, and I guess it's up to Sean Payton and his appetite for starting over, because parting with Cortland Sutton would probably be a bitter pill to swallow. But if it means, I don't know, getting a second round pick in exchange, we know the Ravens haven't drafted well in the second round. I don't think that should be a motivation for giving that pick away, just because, you know, you swung and missed on that, you know, part of the draft a bunch of times. It doesn't mean that you should just forfeit it and say, you know, we give up, we're going to take the sure thing. It obviously worked with the Roquan deal. It might work for a deal for Cortland Sutton. I will say that, you know, just in kind of digging into this wide receiver draft class, the more analytically minded / you know, fantasy football invested people seem to think that after that top tier of guys, the folks who have these X receiver possession type bodies might not actually be anywhere close to sure things for, you know, at the next level. You know, Keon Coleman can't really separate. Xavier Leggett, speedy, but also just not really a whole lot of wiggle room. And so if those guys are best served by becoming these big slot, power slot guys, then you're just still kind of stuck with that same problem of who's going to replace, you know, OBJ as that X receiver. I mean, he was so much more productive last year than Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers were. With Bateman, at least, I think it was just a function of him not being, you know, looked at as often as he maybe should have been in progressions. I think that when he was a rookie, he was very, very effective at that backside, you know, X receiver spot. And I think he could be in 2024 as well. But depending on how the Ravens feel about some of these guys who are 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", and their ability to come in and, you know, at least in year one, be effective at that isolated spot, it could maybe force their hand in looking for a guy and, you know, maybe paying a premium to get him. I think that's the reality of it. You know, the Ravens are going to have to pay a steep price tag to get someone like Cortland Sutton, because there aren't a lot of Cortland Suttons in the NFL.
All right, Jonas, what's your hottest take that you have for us?
So this is, you know, putting the cart before the horse, but obviously a lot of buzz around the Ravens possibly taking Arizona offensive lineman Jordan Morgan in the first round. We know that they went to the Arizona Pro Day, you know, a month ago or so at this point, whatever it was, and they were pretty hands-on with him. I think it was Joe D, the offensive line coach, who stuck around a little bit afterward and, you know, put him through some individual workouts. They were clearly invested in enough in him to show up and to do all this extra work with him. So there's, you know, good reason why you have seen these connections between the Ravens and Jordan Morgan at that number 30 spot. But my take, and Paul, tell me if this is hot enough, is that he would be the most boring first round pick in Ravens history.
So you're
boring doesn't mean bad.
Your spiciness is relying on somebody else being not spicy.
Exactly. Boring doesn't mean bad. Boring can be good. But I think when it comes to just sex appeal, the deck is inherently stacked against Jordan Morgan. Linemen are inherently boring, and interior linemen, which Jordan Morgan might have to be because he might not have the tools to play tackle, are the most boring lineman group because they are the least important of that spot. There's not a lot of competition for first round linemen in Ravens history when we're just kind of talking about this from a, you know, 30,000 foot view. Only one defensive lineman taken in the first round. That was Haloti Ngata. He was Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year. He blocked kicks. He was capable of these incredible superhuman physical feats. Just looking back at his old draft profiles, he set a school record with a 505-pound bench press and then repped 225 pounds 37 times at the NFL Scouting Combine. So it was easy to get excited about Haloti Ngata. Only one interior offensive lineman in Ravens history taking the first round. That was Ben Grubbs out of Auburn. He never missed a game at Auburn. Jordan Morgan has had some medical problems. He started 37 straight games. Not really an injury history. He played on that undefeated 2004 Auburn team that had one of the greatest running back duos in SEC history with Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown. So he at least had this proximity to greatness that, you know, made him more of a known commodity. You know, other guys who maybe might have kind of been considered ho-hum selections in the first round. When Ed Reed was taken, he wasn't really a sexy pick. You know, Baltimore Sun columnist Mike Preston, if you can kind of go back and find his column when the Ravens took Ed Reed, basically said it wasn't a high-profile pick. He kind of joked on him because of his name and said it like his name was basically that of a lawyer. But Ed Reed had 17 picks and 4 defensive touchdowns over his final 2 years at Miami. So again, there was that splashy production. Matt Elam, the last pick of the 2023 first round, his highlight reel as a safety at Florida, full of huge hits, easy to get excited about him. CJ Mosley was a Butkus Award winner as the nation's best linebacker at Alabama. Ronnie Stanley was a top 10 pick. Todd Heap was a record-breaking receiver at Arizona State. Hayden Hurst, you know, a little bit older for that first-round prototype that the Ravens usually like to target, but he was this athletic, you know, tight end. He was a former minor league baseball player. There was, you know, a fun little narrative about them. Jordan Morgan doesn't really have any of this. You know, he didn't play for a big-time program at Arizona. They won 10 games last year, but that was his first winning season in 5 years at Arizona. He doesn't have a clean injury history, battled through severe ankle injuries in 2021. He tore his right ACL in 2022. He's not young, which is something that the Ravens have traditionally prioritized for some of these first-rounders. He's going to be 23 by the time that the preseason rolls around. He's not a splashy player. As a run blocker, he's not really finishing his blocks with a lot of pancakes. In pass protection, you know, I think the most promising film was him going up against UCLA and Leatu Latu. He did a really good job against them. But again, even that, he's not going against him on every snap. So there's kind of a limited sample size. And the most important thing is, like, just from a kind of fan perspective, you get excited about projecting guys to certain spots, but it's hard to graft his game at Arizona onto what he might do in Baltimore, because he played left tackle at Arizona and maybe he does it for the Ravens eventually, but I don't think they're going to unseat Ronnie Stanley all of a sudden in 2024 and say, actually, we want you to try right tackle for this last year because we want Jordan Morgan to play left tackle. And we also don't know how Jordan Morgan would look at guard, because according to PFF, he didn't play a single snap inside. So, you know, when I was putting this outline together, Paul, I was listening to a lot of Shakira, and, you know, there's some songs that really muy caliente, really, really hook in Spanish, but you play her versions of them in English and they just don't hit the same. And I felt the same way about Jordan Morgan. You know, there's a lot to like about what he did at left tackle, but it's really hard to say, oh, this is going to cook the same way at left guard or right tackle, because we just don't know. And that wouldn't, that really takes some of the luster off what could be the Ravens' number 30 overall pick in that first round.
Wow. I mean, look, hips are important for an offensive tackle, and maybe if he succeeds, we could say his hips don't lie. I didn't imagine a Shakira reference at the 40-minute mark in this podcast, but here we are. I think the benefit would also be if they draft Jordan Morgan and stick him at right tackle, the casuals could stay. You know, we got Morgan at right tackle without knowing, and they would still be correct because Morgan Moses to Jordan Morgan.
By the way, I just thought of a meme with you saying that. We could do the Drake meme where it's like the
thing.
I don't like this, but yeah, it's Morgan Moses, but then it's Jordan Morgan. Hey,
right. Yeah. I mean, they could have been the,
you got the name.
If they had gotten rid of Ronnie Stanley this offseason and had drafted Jordan Morgan to be their left tackle and kept Morgan Moses at right tackle, could have been that law firm that I see commercials for, Morgan & Morgan. I think the Ravens are battling an uphill battle, and we covering the draft are battling an uphill battle when it comes to the exciting level of this draft, because they're not picking in the top 10. They're not picking in the top 20. They're picking very, very late on day one. They are probably not going to take a sexy position. I mean, wide receiver would be the sexiest position that they could go for, and we still think that they're going to go along the offensive line. They could trade back because of all the teams that might be wanting to hop back into the end of the first round. So there's a lot of things that we're battling here as we try to, you know, look at the enticing level and as the Ravens try to hype up this draft and whoever they will take with the first round pick. I think that's a good take, Jonas. Where he ranks, where Jordan Morgan would rank all time, I'll leave that to you. But yeah, I think that whoever they take here, if it is an offensive tackle, I think a lot of fans are probably also, who aren't following the draft as closely, are probably getting confused by all of the names of these tackles being thrown around in the first round, because there are simply so many of them. And when you get to 30, there's, you know, the more picks that get taken, the higher variance there is, and the more options for who will be on the board and who the Ravens could take. So it's probably confusing to people who aren't diving deep into this. And we're going to try to make it as least confounding as possible. Jonas,
if his name was Kool-Aid Morgan, I do think there would be a lot more excitement over that possibility.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Otherwise,
it's Jordan and Morgan.
Even Kingsley Suamatia, I think, is a name that carries some weight, some gravitas, some Kingly power. Jonas, my hot take is I would say a little spicier than that. Are you prepared? All right. My take is, if Michael Penix is on the board at number 62, the Ravens should take him. And the reason that I have this here is, first off, I don't think that Bo Nix or Michael Penix or any of those fringe first round quarterbacks is going to be on the board there. But if one of them were to slip, I don't think it would be the craziest thing in the world to take a backup quarterback for Lamar Jackson. We saw the Eagles do it with Jalen Hurts a few years ago. That ended up working out, but not in the way anybody imagined, and him overtaking Carson Wentz. I don't think Michael Penix will eventually overtake Lamar Jackson if he joins the Ravens. However, I've been on the record on this podcast as saying I think the Ravens need to invest more in the backup quarterback position than what they have currently invested. You have a 38-year-old in Josh Johnson. You lost Tyler Huntley this offseason. Malik Cunningham is a developmental prospect who may never, ever develop. You are offseason removed from another offseason where we were talking, or a season removed from an offseason where we're talking about Lamar Jackson's health being a long-term concern. I know you just handed him the big contract. I know he was fully healthy for the majority of the season, every game he played. However, I think that they need to invest some more in that backup quarterback position. And I'm not wild about these day three guys that they could get. We've talked about Jordan Travis, Michael Pratt, a lot of older quarterbacks who may not have a whole lot left to go. And look, a lot of those guys that you take on day three, those quarterbacks, some of them don't make the team. Some of them end up on the practice squad. And they end up being nothing. But because it's a quarterback position, they get bumped up the board, so teams take them higher. So that's why I think maybe the Ravens play into that. That's why I would be okay with them going up and getting Michael Penix. Maybe not trading up for him, but if he's on the board at number 62. Do I really believe this? I don't know. But I thought it was spicy, and I thought it's an interesting thought experiment.
Let's say he plays like four games next year because, knock on wood, Lamar gets hurt and he does really, really well. Do you trade him when his value is at its utmost?
Yeah, that would be an okay scenario. Like you think about best case scenario, and it's probably, you know, he comes in and wins a few. I would say best ideal case scenario is like Nick Foles, he wins the Super Bowl as your backup quarterback. But realistic best case scenario is Lamar has to miss some games. That would be unfortunate. But Penix or whoever you draft with that pick would come in and play well enough so that you stay afloat and you don't have what happened 2 years ago happen again, which is the team collapses down the stretch and you miss the playoffs because of poor quarterback play. The backup quarterback spot is either the least important position on the field or the most important. There's no in between. And so it's hard to judge how much value it has, because another best case scenario is you draft him at 62. He doesn't see the field because Lamar Jackson is healthy the entire season and you get no return on your day two pick. That's also okay, because the added benefit is your superstar quarterback was healthy for the entire season. So I don't know exactly how to value this position, but I do know that the Ravens have seen just how important that position can be. And I think it's frankly, if they were to come out of this draft without a quarterback and they just maybe add somebody as an undrafted free agent, I would be a little bit disappointed, because I would say, have you learned your lesson from the last 2 years? And have you forgotten the lessons of the 2022 and 2021 seasons?
Paul, did you see those clips last year of what quarterback would look like if their handedness was flipped?
Yes.
Like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Right. I kind of remember seeing Lamar look what it would look like if Lamar were a left-hander. And I don't think it was all that dissimilar from Michael Penix's delivery.
Really? I mean, I think Penix has a stronger arm. He's got a rocket arm and can throw a great deep ball, which has never been Lamar's strength.
Yeah. And again, not really. You can be fast without being elusive, but Michael Penix did run a sub 4.6 40 at his pro day. So it's not like you're throwing Josh Johnson back there if you need to. Obviously, there's probably not a chance in hell that Michael Penix makes it out of the top 40, considering
I don't think the teams
need a quarterback. But I mean, for hot takes, I think this is the kind of temperature that you're looking for. So
yeah,
I don't think it's going to happen, but I endorse your line of thinking.
Thank you. If it were an early second round pick, I'd say probably not. I'd say trade out of that spot, and you know, and also if he's somehow makes it on the, you know, all the way to 62, maybe that is when the Broncos or Raiders or somebody gets desperate and offers you a haul for that pick in order to draft him. I just think that I'm using Michael Penix as an example of the kind of investment I'm looking for in backup quarterback from the Ravens. And yes, they have other positional needs. They have plenty of needs along the offensive line that they need to address in this draft. They have the secondary, they have wide receiver, but don't forget about backup quarterback, because it'll come back and bite you when you least expect it. Jonas,
my nuclear take for just getting things off
nuclear. Why would you save this? You got to drop it.
Like,
what's your nuclear?
Well, I think this might come up when we do our mock draft later this week. But just that, like, the Ravens should trade up to. They should try to jump the Pittsburgh Steelers so the Steelers don't draft Demaryius Mims.
All right. I like that. I don't think that's nuclear.
When trading up for a oft-injured tackle in a draft rich with tackles is I think, pretty spicy. But again, I am a pale white guy who doesn't really know what spice means.
That's true. And my Irish blood says spice is no good. All right. At Jonas underscore Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I am at Paul Mancano. Should the Ravens trade up for Amarius Mims over the Pittsburgh Steelers? Let us know. Give us a like, a thumbs up, a subscribe. Anywhere you get your podcasts, you can get the Banner Ravens podcast. You can watch it live each week on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook as well. We will have a mock draft, a live, I think we're going the full seven round mock draft. I think tomorrow is when we have it scheduled, so stay tuned for that. We will have that on all of our feeds. And then on Thursday night, we will have a live feed as we go up to the number 30 pick. And then we will have a post pick show for you as well on Thursday. Plus, we'll have complete coverage on the BaltimoreBanner.com. $1 for 6 months is where you can get all of our great work. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Jonas Schaefer, I'm Paul Mancano. Catch you next time.